Dr. David Weyendorf and Paul Hunton. Thank you so much for joining me today. Full disclosure, Paul is our general manager for KTTZ TV and FM, but he's also an Emmy Award-winning director. So, Paul, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
First off, I want to just congratulate you guys on a beautiful, important, impactful film.
It's really the chance of a lifetime to share with people in other parts of the country. I've been going up there for the last 10 years, taking students with me on the Arctic Soils Field Tour. And every year when we bring students back, they always talk about how much that trip meant to them and how it's influenced the way that they look at the world. So hearing that kind of feedback from these students, I thought, you know, in developing this film, this is a wonderful opportunity to share our love of natural resource conservation with the rest of the United States. And I think we've done so beautifully in this film.
Yeah, Alaska to me, I'd never been before. It was my first time going, which was frightening as a filmmaker, stepping into an arena like that where you've never been before. And the first thing you really find out when you get to Alaska is it truly is the last frontier. It is pure wilderness, especially when you get outside of Anchorage, when you get into the village system. I mean, we visited several places where there are no roads to get to these places. You
wow.
literally have to take an airplane to be able to even get there. They're that far off the grid, if you will. And so you immediately realize and kind of come to respect how the pioneer spirit must have driven so many people into such, you know, terrifying situations, and yet they were able to create light, you know, civilization out of this just amazing wilderness. So that was the first thing. The second thing about Alaska is everything will kill you. And so you learn that real
like
quick.
What?
Well, so there's wild fruit. In the summer, it's a magical place, and there's wild fruit that grows along everywhere. Blueberries, raspberries, all that stuff just kind of grows naturally. And I ate some raspberries, and then my throat started to close up.
Oh, no.
On the drive back to the place we were staying. And luckily, our production assistant had an antihistamine, and I was able to get it to stop. But just be careful when you go to Alaska.
Yeah, and aside from that, you've got grizzly bears. You've got, you know, avalanches, earthquakes. I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff that, you know, we just don't see down here in Lubbock, Texas.
It's just amazing to me. This kind of started, Dr. Weyendorf, kind of for you to get some to capture some perspective from, forgive me if I pronounce it wrong, Dr. Chin Lu Ping.
That's exactly
who
right.
is a world-renowned soil expert.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
the short definition.
Exactly. So he was a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks for 25, 30 years, and he led this field tour and conducted incredible research on Arctic ecosystems and Arctic soils. A lot of his research was funded by the National Science Foundation. He's been, you know, recognized at top conferences the world over for the work that he's produced. And so when he came to me a few years ago and said after his long and storied career, he's thinking about eventually retiring. He's in his late 70s.
Yes.
I thought there's got to be a way that we can, you know, somehow capture his knowledge, because once he leaves the discipline, we're going to lose a tremendous amount of knowledge. And so that, you know, in developing this film, this was really a way for us to kind of interview him throughout the Arctic Soils Field Tour, have him tell some of those stories and hear about his perspective on the soils and how we should manage them, the changes that he's seen in those ecosystems over his 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and really capture all that on film in a beautifully done way for people to appreciate.
Magnificently done way. Mm-hmm. I want to talk more about some of the villages that Paul mentioned, but first let's talk about the issues that Alaska that you guys really highlight on, the soil issues, the melting of the glaciers, the willows blooming early. It's really, if you are a skeptic about climate change, you need to see this film. It will open your eyes. Alaska, to me in the film, it's ground zero.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. What we're seeing in climate change is the two extremes. So you're seeing it in the tropics and you're seeing it in the Arctic, where climate change impacts and effects are way more visible than they are to us in the lower 48. I would argue this year in the lower 48, we saw huge impacts of climate change that were very visible. when you look at Christmas of 2015, actually, you had a tornado in Dallas, an ice storm in Lubbock, and a flood in Austin simultaneously.
Wow.
Never before seen record level weather events going on. So we do see it more here. But in the Arctic, we're seeing extreme changes at an extreme pace. And I'll let Dr. Weindorf speak to the permafrost issues and the soil issues we're seeing.
Yeah, you know, we showed this film to a couple of people the other night, and one of the people who saw the film and was in telling us about her perspective on it. She's not a scientist. And she said, you know, I've heard a lot about this issue of climate change and how it's affecting the Arctic, but what I always think about are glaciers melting. She said, I hadn't even thought about permafrost mm-hmm. and the thawing that's going on in the permafrost. She said, this film totally brought that to light for me because I had not even considered that before. And so when we think about things like that, there's a tremendous amount of carbon that is stored in these frozen permafrost systems. And it's been there for thousands and thousands of years. And as long as it's frozen in that permafrost and it's not melted, it's locked away out of the atmosphere. But as that permafrost starts to thaw, and we get these microbes chewing on that organic matter, breaking it down, we get carbon dioxide and methane that are released back to the atmosphere. And in the film, we actually show that, where we throw a torch out there on a frozen lake and we
yes.
get this huge plume of fire coming up out of the lake, where that's frozen methane that's accumulated under the lake. And as it's starting to thaw, the methane is liberated back to the atmosphere. But that's just kind of an example of the changes going on. And another thing that we see that's a really important issue, especially for the coastal village of Shishmaref that we were at, is
yes.
coastal erosion. So I've worked on a research study up there where we've documented the amount of tundra being lost into the Beaufort Sea. It's cutting back into the tundra at a rate of 15 feet per year for hundreds of miles. So sea level begins to rise, and these villages that are on barrier islands and have been there for many hundreds of years are just disappearing. I mean, they literally are washing off into the sea.
I want to talk more about Shishmaref. At the end of the film, you show a statistic where the village of Shishmaref has voted to relocate because basically it's falling off into the sea. There was an interview that you guys conducted with several people there where they talked about them being the last generation to actually live off the land and the sea. To me, it was heartbreaking to hear these villagers talk about, we can't live here anymore. People don't get it. It's not worth the price of oil.
And it's, you know, the one thing we need to think about is not just the idea of, oh, well, they can't live there anymore. The world has changed and now their island's gone. They need to move. Get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving people, knowing you need to move, that's something that I think when you hear people just say, oh, okay, well, yeah, move then. You know, if something gets in the way of where you live, just get out of there. Well, it's not that simple.
No.
Because we're talking about climate refugees, which the village of Shishmaref will be, and we will lose a culture, a language, and hundreds, if not thousands, of years. We talked to some villagers at Shishmaref who said their oral history dates back thousands of years
right.
that their people have been in this area. We're talking about losing an entire people to the effects of climate change. And to me, it's not worth it. To me, the culture and the history of these humans and their lives and their families mm-hmm. is worth saving. And to your point of them being gone, it's a real paradox because you have a state that's number one revenue is oil.
Mm-hmm.
And they rely heavily on that oil. But yet at the same time, those carbon emissions and the fuel itself are what's sort of pushing climate change to happen at a more rapid rate. We see more carbon emissions in the atmosphere since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution than we've ever seen in the record
mm-hmm.
as far as our atmosphere goes. And so it's a very paradoxical concept to think that this state, which relies so heavily, so to move Shishmaref, you would need Alaska to pay to move them
mm-hmm.
as a whole, which they rely on oil to do that. So
right.
you're talking about the thing that's killing you, essentially, metaphorically mm-hmm. speaking, is what can save you.
Mm.
And there's far more villages than just Shishmaref. I mean, there were 30
32?
Or 32 different
right.
villages like that that are impacted at that level.
What I thought was really interesting was you always hear about carbon emissions and how it's bad for you. There's a great illustration in the film that really drove it home to me, how the atmosphere kind of traps the carbon in and everything heats up.
That's exactly right. I mean, we talk about the classical greenhouse effect.
Right.
And essentially what happens is the solar radiation comes in, some of that bounces off of the surface of the Earth and would normally head back out into space. But when you put a blanket, essentially, a piece of plastic or cellophane or glass over the Earth, and in this case of the Earth, we're talking about carbon dioxide or methane, right. When that heat that's bouncing off the surface of the Earth tries to go back out into space, it gets trapped in the atmosphere, and then it radiates back down to the Earth again, and things just warm up faster and faster as the concentration of CO2 and methane in the atmosphere increases. And, you know, there have been a lot of people who have discussed what is the cause of, you know, climate change and those kinds of things, and we point out in the film, those are open to scientific debate, but the concentration of those compounds in the atmosphere is scientific fact.
Right.
That is not in debate.
That's right.
We can measure that, scientific study after scientific study.
The graphic really drove it home for me. I imagine as a soil scientist, you had to be thrilled to study and to look under the great doctor that you looked under, the great scientist. As a soil scientist, what were you looking to gather when you went up there?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you come across some really world-renowned experts in the field, and it's mm-hmm. always humbling to work with those people. And I've had the opportunity in my career to work with many of those people around the world, and when I struck up this relationship with Chin Lu Ping, it was just amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. And here at Texas Tech, I'm the professor who teaches the students, but I can tell you, when I'm out in the field with Chin Lu Ping, I'm the student again. I'm mm-hmm. learning from him.
Right.
And his 70 or 80 years worth of experience that he's seen around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really humbling experience. And, you know, being able to take all of that knowledge and the science that we have and communicate that to mm-hmm. the public, mm-hmm. that to me is one of the really exhilarating parts of doing this entire project. We talk in the film about how soils as a discipline is kind of not a very glamorous subject, but it's one that's critically important.
Exactly.
Because we grow our food there, and we grow cotton to make our jeans with, and all kinds of things. All of that comes from soil. It's such an important natural resource for us in this nation.
And I just want to add that if Chin Lu Ping is the Yoda of soil science, then David is the Luke Skywalker. He's being very humble, but he himself is a soil science rock star. And I, as a filmmaker, I had so much studying and research to do before we even left, because I needed to truly grasp what we were looking at. And I think what I'm so very proud of that we were able to accomplish with this film is that we've now created a document. So for me, it was like a 2-year class on climate change and on soil and on the impacts that we have on those ecosystems and those things. And what I think we've done is created an 80-minute document that skips the 2 years. I think if you watch our film, you go through the process that I went through over 2 years in 80 minutes, because we took the science, we took the personal stories, we told them both in a way that people can understand them, consume them, and then take direct action
yes.
based on them,
yes.
which was something that David and I both thought was monumentally important to what our mission was, which was to educate people about climate change and give them direct action that they can take to help mitigate it. And that's one thing the last act of the film is all about. It's about making personal choices that will then benefit, because, you know, we've politicized the subject so much, the subject of climate change, and it's a gross error mm-hmm. because it affects all of us. We all live on the same planet. We all have to live here.
Right.
And so it's not a red, blue, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative issue. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's about humans getting along and living in the one Earth that we have that's habitable.
Exactly.
And so the things that people can do are take direct action, recycle that plastic bottle. I read recently there's a study where almost like 98% of every piece of plastic that's ever been manufactured still exists on the Earth.
Wow.
And we have to do better at recycling, reusing, and moving towards more renewable energies.
Mm-hmm.
And that dichotomy can exist with fossil fuels and renewable energies right here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
We are one of the leaders in renewable energy, in wind energy.
Yes.
Rick Perry has done a good job in his tenure, and Greg Abbott has continued mm-hmm. pushing for wind energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that we're doing right here in Texas, where we have both of those energy assets, and mm-hmm. we're utilizing them. And we need to see that more across the country and the world.
Mm-hmm.
Did I see a wind turbine in Shishmaref?
Oh, yeah. They had
in Kotzebue.
Well, in Kotzebue's the wind farm, but Shishmaref does have some wind turbines that help power their local electric system. And so they had small ones in Shishmaref, but Kotzebue, which is another Arctic village, has a whole wind farm. And in the film, you come to find out that for several months over in a year, the wind fueled the entire village and its electrical grid.
We've talked about soil, we've talked about the glaciers. I want to talk now about the animal population. There's some beautiful shots of animals and some hard-to-see shots of animals in this film.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the years that I've been up there, I've seen just about everything. You see grizzly bears out there literally just walking across the road. A lot of people, you know, would go to a zoo or something here in the lower 48 to see that. I mean, up there, literally could walk right through your campground, and they mean it when they say make sure you keep your food locked away and things like that. We see, you know, all types of caribou, musk oxen, you know, just everything you can possibly imagine, all different types of birds up there, and you could come across those literally at any time because that is their wild natural habitat, and it's really awe-inspiring to see that. You know, you feel pretty small and insignificant when you see a big grizzly walking by.
and you know, one thing that some of the animals up there are facing, we talked to one of the most renowned, and it's his interview's not in the film. It will eventually make it to our website, which will act as an educational hub. But he monitors the caribou herds up in the northern Arctic, and he had mentioned to us how this weather, these climate impacts that are happening as it warms up earlier in the year, it's creating the caribou herd migration patterns to change. And in doing so, you're talking about villages, and people don't realize this. This is what you need to understand about Alaska. This is their food. This is their Walmart. This is their United Market Street. And their supermarket is leaving them and changing its pattern, and they don't have the ability to hunt and gather this needed meat source, food source, that they have to live. So it's not just, you know, a one village or this or that or the other. We're talking about entire populations of northern Arctic Alaskan cities, towns, villages who are losing everything.
And there, you know, that concept extends also to the ocean, to the sea, because when we were talking with the village elders, they were talking about rotten sea ice. And what they mean by that is this kind of slushy, not hard ice, but kind of broken down ice. And he said every year now they have people who are having to walk out across that ice that fall through and people die. I mean, that's a real cause of loss of life when they used to have this really hard ice that they could easily traverse, and they just don't have that anymore.
I want to ask one more question about the film, and then I want to move on to the film festival, festival circuit. Something I found really interesting and that blew my mind, I mean, you see it in New Mexico a little bit, but not to this extent. The Iditarod, the starting point, stockpiling snow.
So they have, for the last several years, had such little snow at the historical start date of the Iditarod, which for those of you who don't know, it's one of the most famous races in the world, sled dog mushing, as they call it, sled dog racing. And it starts in Anchorage, and they've had to either postpone it, move it, or what they've done and what you see in the film is actually house snow. So make stockpiles of snow, warehouse snow, and then they bring it in on trains from further up north so that they can lay out snow so that the sled dogs can have somewhere to start. And in the film, you see that even on the day of the start, the announcer's like, it's melting, hurry, go, go, which is unheard of. I mean, when you think of Alaska, you think of hard winter, scary winter. When you think of the Iditarod, you think of guys in 20-pound furs, parkas. They're having to take on all this disastrously cold weather, and it's not happening anymore.
It's so, so sad to me. And this was just as an animal lover, as a dog lover. What were the little boots that were on the dogs? Did you see those?
Yes. So the little dogs have them on. I don't know. I would just be guessing at this point. Anecdotally, I would imagine that they're for traction. Even though dogs have claws, I think that sometimes for the ice and different things, I mean, you've seen a dog run across a hardwood floor. Mm-hmm. Ice is the same thing. I would imagine that those are kind of rubber booties to help grab some traction. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure, but it is cute.
It is funny. It's
like
cute.
Fluorescent pink ones
yes,
on.
Yes, they're just kind of
on a white
on
dog.
Snow,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
On that stockpiled
yeah,
snow.
That's right.
Okay, so in March, you guys have a big date in D.C. when the film, again, it's Between Earth and Sky, will be screened at the 2017 Environmental Film Festival.
That's exactly right. The national debut is at the Environmental Film Festival in the nation's capital. Mm-hmm. It'll be March 15th at noon at the Wilson Center. Mm-hmm. We're super excited about this. This is a major film festival in the United States. I think last year they had 27,000 people attend this.
Great.
You know, the major media outlets will be there looking at things. And this is really a chance for us to showcase not only our film, but the issues presented in the film to a national and international audience.
It's huge. I'm just honored and kind of blown away that it happened. We were very, very excited for it. And it, like David said, it's one of the premier film festivals in the country. It's one of the premier environmental film festivals in the world. The opening night is Al Gore with his sequel to An Inconvenient Truth, and he's going to be there. And I mean, then we're talking big films. His film's also opening Sundance, which is the biggest independent film festival in the country. So we feel like, well, we feel very proud and honored that we are included in this thing. It's kind of hard to even wrap my head around.
Absolutely. This film is getting a lot of good press across social media platforms. Every day I open up LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, even on Instagram, there's images of the film. There's a quote about the film. It's just absolutely tremendous for you as a professor and as an executive producer. And Paul, of course, for you with your two Emmys, I'm betting this one might get another nod. I really am.
I'm
just going to call it right now. So if it does get a nod, I get the invite
there
to the actual ceremony.
Yeah, we like it.
To the actual ceremony. Okay, briefly, this film is really kind of a Texas Tech baby. We have Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, who is just a guru on climate change. Of course, you gentlemen. The score was Scott and Amy Ferris with the score. So as a university and working for the university and being a part of Texas Tech Public Media, I'm proud for this film, and I'm excited.
Let me. I just want to start because I want to give kudos to David. You know, David had the ability as the executive producer, as the person who did the major amount of fundraising, to really take this film to any documentary filmmaker, and they would have been thrilled to have the project. There are probably hundreds of filmmakers who would love to take the chance to be able to tell this story and make this film. And the one thing that David said from the start when he hired us and when we got together and started collaborating on this project was he felt like making it here at Texas Tech meant something.
Yes.
And it meant something to the university. It meant something to him as an individual. It meant something to make sure that as much localized creative effort could be conjured up to make this thing come to life. So a huge shout out to David, because he could have gone anywhere with this project and he came to us.
Well, I just want to follow up on that. I mean, the vision was not only shared by Paul and his team, but also by the upper administration at Texas Tech and from the president's office on down the line. I mean, they have been incredibly supportive. Back at the time when we started this project, it was Duane Ellis as the president. And he said, when we approached him with this idea, he said, you know, when this comes out and we have this final product, this beautifully constructed film, I want to see a big double T right on the front of that. And that really stuck with me. I'll never forget that comment, because I can tell you this is the third academic institution that I've served, but this is the only one of those three that would have the vision and the bold charisma to go for something like this. I mean, what is the school in West Texas doing making a film in Alaska?
Which we've been asked.
Exactly, right?
Well, from here it's possible,
from
right?
From here it's possible. That's exactly right. And so, you know, the connection with Paul and John Seaborn and everybody over at the television station has just been magical. And I think one of the real strengths that it brought to the film is the idea that myself as a scientist and Paul and his team as filmmakers, we can literally get around a table and talk about issues and say, no, let's cut this. We want to put this in. Add a little bit more about this. We have the ability to interact between that science and filmmaking aspect very organically. And if I was working with somebody in Hollywood or somewhere else, it would be a very different type of relationship.
Right.
So that's what I think. That's a lot of the magic that's sprinkled into this project.
Well, I can say from one producer to another, you did a brilliant job.
Thank
the
you
film
so much.
Is so beautiful, and it's Paul. It's just so well directed.
Thank you.
So, do you guys know what you're going to wear to the premiere?
Probably something like this. I try not to get too fancy.
I take my style tips from Paul.
Yeah, so probably something pretty laid back. It'll be a great day. It'll be a lot of fun. We're excited for it. We have three of the scientists in the film from Alaska, including Dr. Ping, coming out to enjoy the premiere with us.
Wonderful.
The crew. So another collaboration point, the College of Media and Communication supplied us with our production assistants, which we wouldn't have gotten from anywhere else because they prepare them to be professionally ready like no one else in the country. And so we have one of them coming back out, our crew. So this is really our big unveiling of the film with the entire crew, with the subjects in the film. In Washington, D.C. for the country. So
in
we're
front
excited.
Of a national audience.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. And
Thank
I'm
you.
Guessing
Thanks.
That this film will be picked up, will be shown. We're hoping to get it shown on PBS because that's such an important, it's such an important film for everyone to see. It really is. Again, the film is Between Earth and Sky, Climate Change on the Last Frontier. Director Paul Hunton, executive producer Dr. David Weindorf, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you
for having us.
Appreciate it.